Good morning and welcome to the regular Planning Commission meeting of the County of San Luis Obispo for Thursday, December 12th. Can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Harrison?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Brown?
Here.
Chairman Moltari?
Here.
Please let the record show Commissioner Don Ortiz Legg is absent.
Okay, thank you. It's traditional that we start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Please join me.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Our first item on the agenda is the public comment period, and this is where folks that would like to address us on items relevant to the Planning Commission but are not on the agenda may do so. I have two speaker slips. Eric Greening. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. Glad to see recruiting underway for the new project manager position on Diablo Canyon decommissioning. I hope we can find someone well qualified for the multiple demands of this critically important position. I've already spoken here about my concern that the applicant for this project might not be PG&E, might in fact be a hedge fund like the one allied with wildfire victims seeking more just compensation for their losses that is using PG&E's bankruptcy process to try to leverage a hostile takeover. Such a decommissioning applicant might have little or no knowledge of nuclear safety and might be under tremendous financial pressure to cut corners and generate quick profits. The county would need to be strong and resolute to protect the public interest. A new wrinkle is the RFP just issued by PG&E seeking a better cask design for long-term storage of the highest level waste. Once a design is chosen, I know they'll need NRC approval. Must they also seek it from our county and the Coastal Commission? I think a strong case can be made for the necessity of this. Will the new cask proposal be environmentally reviewed as part of the larger decommissioning project, or is it a separate freestanding project, decommissioning notwithstanding? Can the cask application be evaluated in its operational dimensions? How many staff are needed to fill, emplace, monitor, and as needed, repair or re-emplace over the indefinite period during which the casks are resident on the Diablo site? Should an endowment fund be required to ensure the persistence of these needed people? Given the finite lifetime of each cask, a time will come when failing casks, both those presently on site and those to be placed in the future, will need to be re-enclosed in larger, hopefully more resilient casks. What sorts of infrastructure, materials, facility, and people would need to be in place on site to allow this work to be done on site? The alternative, shipping of failing casks off-site, should be unthinkable until a route, transport system, and containment system capable of accommodating safe movement of this ultra-lethal cargo is in place. None of this now exists. The last thing we need is to set a precedent for moving these casks outside the purview of a decommissioning plan or any other plan. I hope your commission will request a study session a month or two after the new project manager is hired to gain an overview of the process or processes involved with Diablo-related matters and at which you can set your own expectations for protecting public safety and public health. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. With regard at least to the coastal permits, perhaps staff at some time, Eric, can help you with that. The more technical stuff is probably going to require some additional study. Thank you, though. Okay, Jeff Edwards. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Moltari and commissioners. Good day. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to continue the conversation about community advisory councils that I've had before with you. If you recall, the last time I spoke about advisory councils, it was in connection with Los Osos and the LOCAC and their promulgation of new rules in connection with vacation rentals. And unfortunately, this has become a trend with advisory councils. They feel as if they can create new rules without going through the process. And as you folks know, especially in the coastal zone, it's a very laborious, long process. The most recent case I'd like to point out is a project that you approved earlier this year. It was a hillside home in Cayucas. And at issue is how the height is calculated. And the Cayucas Advisory Council has created their own new height calculations. And they wrote a letter to you when you considered the matter, as I mentioned earlier this year. And that wasn't good enough. So what they do now is one member of the Advisory Council has appealed this to the California Coastal Commission. It's going to be heard this Friday, and fortunately, the staff has proposed no substantial issue, so it's likely the commission will not take jurisdiction. But it underscores these advisory councils really exceeding their authority, in my opinion. And it's a trend that's developing and increasing, actually. It's hard enough to get projects approved and jump through all the various hoops. We don't need another entity that is lacking authorization to weigh in on these projects. As you know, advisory councils are largely charged with taking individual projects and looking at them in the context of the rules as they exist. And they've gone way beyond that. We do know that they consider new ordinances and bits of legislation, but they're making recommendations, much like your commission does. You make recommendations. Even at this commission, you don't legislate. The Board of Supervisors does. So if you can't legislate, I don't think the Advisory Council should be doing that. Unfortunately, the appearance is that they've been enabled or empowered by the Planning Department. And I know Advisory Councils, they have training sessions. But something's getting lost in the translation, frankly. So my recommendation, I would like to see advisory councils told what their purview is and really stick to the business at hand. And that's their review of projects and weighing in on various proposals. That's my request. I appreciate it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jeff. Anybody else like to speak to us on an item that's not on the agenda today? Okay. That brings us to our planning staff updates. Good morning, Xandra.
Good morning. Xandra Fowler, Environmental Coordinator. So for your January 9th meeting, the following items have been scheduled. You will be doing the election of your chair and vice chair for the 2020 year. There are three conditional use permits for wireless facilities, and there's also a development plan, coastal development permit for a new structure. And I'm sorry, I don't have all my full notes on that one. For your January 23rd meeting, you have several consent and receive and file items. One is a general plan conformity report for acquisition of some land for the Parks Department for trails. And then you also have another conditional use permit for a wireless facility. The hemp ordinance is scheduled to come to your commission that date, as well as the mining designation amendments that we talked about at your previous meeting. That is also scheduled. Some recent appeals of PC actions. We've had the Lippy AT&T CUP wireless facility in Santa Margarita that your commission took action on in June. That item was upheld, but your action on that was upheld by the Board of Supervisors. The Diablo
Canyon. Excuse me, we had denied that.
Yes. No. The Diablo Canyon Power Plant, North Ranch Road improvements, which your commission approved. The Board of Supervisors partially upheld your approval on that. They did make some modifications to some of the conditions. And then there's the RAGE item that was brought to your commission. That is scheduled for review by the Board of Supervisors on January 28th. And the Helio Day Springs North River Road conditional use permit for indoor and outdoor cultivation, that item has still not been scheduled yet. It was heard by your commission in September. The Cabrillo Court track map and conditional use permit for a 14-lot subdivision, which was acted on by your commission in October, that is scheduled for February 4th, Board of Supervisors. And then the Mancini-Shetler conditional use permit for indoor cannabis cultivation, which was a denial by your commission, that is scheduled for the Board of Supervisors' consideration on February 25th. And then we have Erlen Singwald, who is the division manager for Long Range. He's here to give you some updates on the Long Range items that are going on. Yes.
Could you go ahead? Could you repeat three or four items previous that the board denied? Planning Commission recommendation. What was it?
The board has upheld all of your actions on the denials that have gone, on the approvals, the appeals that have gone forward, okay. On the items I've lifted. The board has upheld all of your actions. Okay. And so, as I was mentioning, Erlen Singwald is here. He's the division manager for Long Range to give you an update on the Long Range items that are currently underway in the planning department.
Thank you very much. Erlen.
Thank you, Alexandria. Erlen Singwald. Division Manager of Long Range and Housing. So I know that at past meetings during planning department updates, Alexandria has mentioned the mining designation and the mining designation, which is scheduled on January 23rd before the Planning Commission. I can give you a brief summary of what that will entail, if that's your wish. So essentially, as I think you're somewhat familiar with, it is updating our general plan and land use ordinance to reflect some changes from the State Mining and Geology Board in 2015 regarding the mapping of mineral resources in the county. So it would rename our current, so we have an EX1 combining designation, which covers areas in the county with mineral extraction potential, not necessarily areas that have mines currently, but have potential for mineral extraction. So it would expand that EX1 to correspond with the updated state mapping. It would also rename EX1 to be consistent with state terminology to a mineral resource area. We would make amendments to land use ordinance and our framework for planning document, which is part of the land use element, to prohibit incompatible land uses in that mineral resource area or EX1. However, single-family dwellings would still be allowed, but when we talk about incompatible uses, it's more higher-density residential or more intensive urbanized uses, which really aren't allowed anyways in the kind of rural and agricultural zone parts of the county. In addition, we would look at our current mines in the county, sand and gravel mines, other types of mineral resource extraction facilities, and place those in the EX combined designation. So EX1, areas with mineral extraction potential. EX is areas that currently have mines. So we would update that based on our current list of permitted mines. And then finally, it would create a mining disclosure zone, which wouldn't have any standards. It would just be an area where future landowners would be put on notice that they are within an area with in proximity to a mine or within an area with mineral extraction potential.
That's coming next month,
yeah. Thank you. More to come on that. Also, the hemp ordinance, as Alexandria mentioned, is scheduled on the same date, January 23rd. So the board gave us some pretty specific direction on the hemp ordinance. Unlike cannabis, it is considered a crop production and grazing land use. The direction from the board was really look at the land use categories where it should be allowed, look at minimum parcel size, and look at setbacks from sensitive receptors, or I think we're just calling that location standards. Processing uses would be subject to our current standards in the ordinance for agricultural processing uses, which generally requires a minor use permit or conditional use permit. So that's coming again on January 23rd. Additional long-range items kind of in the hopper right now. We are well underway on the housing element update. That's due to the state in the end of December 2020. We have a consultant on board. PlaceWorks is the name of the consultant. We have held a public workshop. We had a very well-attended public workshop last month. We're also coordinating with the administrative office on this regional infrastructure and housing plan. So something that's really exciting with our housing element update this cycle is we have regular meetings with all of the city planning directors or their designee and our team to make sure we are moving forward in a coordinated manner on all of our housing element updates. And as part of the scope of the regional infrastructure and housing plan, each of the housing elements, the goal is to have a regional section to the housing element and a set of regional policies and strategies that all of the jurisdictions can agree on, but then also have, of course, the discretion to tailor their own implementation measures and more specific strategies to the uniqueness of their jurisdiction. We will have a public review draft of the housing element out in March 2020 with Planning Commission hearings anticipated in early summer. We will have a public workshop once the public review draft is out to get public input on that. In addition, we are working on updates to our density bonus ordinance. So there have been changes over the last couple years in regards to the state density bonus law. So we're updating our density bonus ordinance in Titles 22 and 23 to reflect that. We are also updating the safety element and the local hazards mitigation plan. The draft safety element will be coming to the Planning Commission around, again, summer 2020, similar track as the housing element update. So those are kind of the highlights of the long-range projects that we're working on right now. I can also give you just a real brief update on the status of projects that have already come to your commission. The accessory dwelling unit ordinance, phase two, that's scheduled to go to the board on January 28th. And, of course, we're taking forward the Planning Commission recommendation on that. Something that's really worth noting is the timing of that. So shortly after the Planning Commission made recommendations on the ADU ordinance, the governor signed a list of state bills that are very prescriptive in what local jurisdictions can and cannot require for ADU development in cities and counties. And that's actually resulted in several changes to our recommended ordinance because it's just clearly implementing state law. A great example is one of the new state laws states that a local jurisdiction cannot have a minimum site area for an ADU. Already, our recommendation was a very minimum site area of 1,750 square feet in an area with urban services. However, that could conflict with the state law. It says no minimum site area, so we're getting rid of that requirement altogether. The state law also provides a list of scenarios in which a local jurisdiction is mandated to approve an ADU, so we're going to reflect those scenarios in the ordinance that we take to the Board of Supervisors. Ag worker housing ordinance was before your commission fairly recently, and again, we anticipate bringing forward the Planning Commission recommendation to the board around February, but we don't have a date scheduled yet on that.
Thank you. I find that very helpful to get context to what we're doing. Yeah. With regard to the ADUs and our recommendation with avoiding very high fire hazard areas, I just would, you might be interested in a recent LA Times editorial that spoke to this, that said we have a housing crisis, but the housing crisis shouldn't be solved by putting more units into dangerous areas. Yeah, that was just a few days ago.
Thank you. We'll look for that article. Thank you.
Other comments?
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chairman. We can't take anything off agenda right now, but I would like to have some reference made to the public comment relative to these advisory councils, et cetera, and get your thoughts on that at some point in time.
I could weigh in now if you want. So our advisory councils do undergo, thank you, Erlyn, do undergo training twice a year. Our next training is scheduled for our CAC chairs in January. And this is an ongoing conversation that we've had when we had our last training with them, and that is feedback that we're receiving beyond what Mr. Edwards had expressed. So there is frustration on both sides. The CACs feel that they would like to, they spend a lot of time and energy volunteering and weighing in on these projects, and they are right there in the community, and they would like to see their recommendations brought forth more, or more explanation as to why some of their recommendations aren't moved forward as part of staff's recommendations. And so those are ongoing conversations that we've had with them. And in our training in January, we will specifically be going over the purview of the CAC, the role of the CAC, how they can provide great feedback to the staff and how staff can better communicate with them why we're making the decisions that we're making when we do or don't accept some of the recommendations that come forward from them.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions or comments for staff? That was very helpful. Thank you very much. Okay, that brings us now to our hearings. And Ramona, could you introduce the first item, please?
Hearing to consider a request by Dan Keyes to amend a building envelope on parcel 3 of reported tract 2656, county file number SUB 2019-00079, supervisorial district number 4, project manager Katie Nall.
Thank you. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the Commission. I'm Katie Nall, planning staff. I'll be presenting the tract map amendment SUB 2019-00079. This tract map amendment proposes to enlarge the building envelope on lot 3 of tract 2656 from 0.78 acres to 1.19 acres. Tract 2656 was a five-lot subdivision approved by the Planning Commission on July 7, 2008. Each lot included building envelopes to protect environmental resources specific to each site. The proposed project is located on Samaran Way, approximately 3.5 miles south of the city of Arroyo Grande. It is within the residential rural land use category and is adjacent to agricultural operations. Here is an aerial view of the parcel. This is the approved map for tract 2656. It includes the building envelopes outlined in blue for all five parcels. The subject parcel is outlined in yellow. It is lot 3 in the tract. This slide shows the existing and proposed building envelopes over a topographic map of the site. The existing is outlined in green and the proposed is outlined in red. The applicant is requesting to increase the building envelope size to include vacant areas suitable for residential development. These identified areas have been reviewed and will continue to meet the objectives of the mitigated negative declaration and the mitigation measures approved for Tract 2656. Here's an aerial view of the site again. The building envelope on the subject parcel, lot 3, was only restricted by the agricultural buffer, a red-legged frog buffer, and to minimize oak tree impacts. The ag buffer is shown here in the purple dashed line, and the red-legged frog buffer was established from the original mitigated negative declaration as 200 feet from the stream to the north. Therefore, the proposed building envelope configuration will remain in compliance with those restrictions, and any impacts to oak trees will be mitigated through the measures previously enforced from the approved map for tract 2656. This is the oak tree mitigation plan from 2012 for tract 2656. The green areas are the candidate sites for planting oak trees for mitigation. The subject parcel, lot 3, has the most area for replanting trees, so although the envelope is increasing, there is sufficient space on site for replacement mitigation. Again, this amendment will be subject to all the mitigation measures required by Tract 2656. So the proposed building envelope allows the owner to use approximately one-sixth of the property. It incorporates the vacant areas in the usable portions of the parcel. It does not infringe on the ag buffer or the red-legged frog buffer to the north, and it will not significantly impact oak woodland habitat above the initial impacts identified in the adopted mitigated negative declaration for Tract 2656. Therefore, staff recommends approval of Amendment SUB 2019-00079 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, with one correction to Condition 3. In the body of the condition, it reads, the applicant shall prepare an amending map showing the new building envelope in addition to the existing conditions A through E listed below, when in fact there are only conditions A through D. Okay. That is all. I will take questions.
Any questions at this time? I do have a few questions, but just a few, just clarification. But maybe we should have the, well, is the applicant here? Okay, so why don't we ask our questions, because you might be able to help answer them, too. Why don't I ask the questions, and I'll call you. Yeah, sorry for the confusion, my fault. Will, you know, it says in the analysis that the amended envelope, you know, will not affect oak trees. But when you look at the, I went out to the site and I also looked at, you know, the aerial, and it looks like we're extending it right into the oak trees. And so I'm not sure that that is a compelling argument not to approve this, but I didn't see the logic or the consistency of your analysis with that.
Sure. So the original tract map, the proposal of the envelopes included a botanical survey mm-hmm. and a biological assessment. And I read through those, and they did identify that, you know, even with the proposed building envelopes for the original tract, that there would be impacts to oak trees and some would be removed. Right. And that is why they provided, if you want to show it on the screen, this oak tree mitigation plan. Right. So maybe to go into detail with this a little bit more, the green areas are areas that they proposed remediation and replanted trees could go. Right. There's a little, there's a table on the side, and I highlighted all the right. Areas mm-hmm. for lot three, and it did identify in that report that lot three would have the most space to mitigate for oak trees. So again, to go back to your point, there will be a larger area for the potential for oak impacts, but there is also significant space to mitigate for that.
Okay. Well, I think, not to be fussy, but I think we might have to look at our findings.
Sure.
In that regard.
Sure.
Is there a ratio involved?
Sorry?
A mitigation ratio for the trees?
Yes. So the original tract, all the mitigations are outlined in the original tract map, but I believe
2 to 1.
Yes,
it's
so
2 to 1
for impacted trees, it's 2 to 1, and for any trees that are removed, oak trees, it's 4 to 1.
Oh, yeah, right.
And again, that all those mitigations will stay with the tract map and this amended building envelope.
Curiosity question: when you're involved with something like this, and you do get permission to take a tree out and replace it, what are the standards of the replacement trees? I mean, you drive by some nurseries that have trees 30 feet tall and they want to transplant them, et cetera. At what level do you replace a tree at?
I believe that would be more of a question for an expert. I'm not okay. quite sure what.
So there's no standard then that it needs to be an 8-foot tree or in a box or something like that, as opposed to a gallon container that you go out and plant. That's where I was coming from.
Terry Waller, excuse me, I have a cold. Terry Waller, planning staff. That can vary depending on the situation, and sometimes we've asked for large box trees, typically when there's visual concerns. In this case, it would probably be a 1 or a 5-gallon tree, because what we find is that the 1 gallons actually, once they drop their taproot, they establish better and more quickly than some of the bigger trees. So typically that's what we do, is a 1 or a 5-gallon.
That's good to know. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
How long do you monitor the trees to see how many continue to live?
That depends on each individual project. I would have to look through the track conditions to identify that, but I can do that right now.
And one other question. These houses going to be visible from the freeway?
No, so in the original mitigated negative declaration, that was one of the considerations. We are in a highway, Highway 101, highway designation corridor, uh-huh. And so that was analyzed. That was only a concern for the two parcels closest to the highway. They still analyzed it for lot three, but because of the topography and the existing vegetation, it was not a concern.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions at this time? Okay, now I will open it to the public hearing. Now's your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to all of you. Thank you for your time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What was your name?
My name is Dan Keyes. So my wife and I purchased this property with the intention of building a home for our family, and as well as an ADU for my mom, who is aging. So once we bought the property, we kind of tried to configure things, and it really wasn't working without getting into. So the existing building envelope is, I think, 30,000 some odd square feet. But the way the property sits, it's essentially a hill, and the building envelope is right on top of the hill. Well, the outlying of that building envelope is it's oak trees and manzanita, you know, sensitive habitat and things that we want to keep on the property. So in order to utilize all of that 30,000 square feet, which is what we would have had to have done, we would be removing a lot more trees than if we just expanded the envelope into the areas that we're seeking. When you show the picture on the screen, when Katie showed the picture, it did look like the envelope does protrude, which it does. But we're on the area to the right there, in the red area, that's obviously all oak trees. But the part that we want to use or utilize, and this would be for like a metal building or a barn, essentially, is down at the very bottom corner there. And it looks like it's oak trees, but it's actually, there's, I think, two oak trees in that area. That's pretty shadowed right now on that overhead. So we don't want to get into the oak trees at all. We actually love the oak trees. We want to save them. I think, unfortunately, the one in the existing building envelope, there's one tree. I think it is, if I'm looking at it correctly, I don't know if you can even see it. It's like a 12-inch oak tree. There's one tree so far that we will have to remove. Sure. But we'll gladly replace it at a 10-to-1 because we like the trees. So the area that we want to include on the bottom left there, which is where the ADU would go, that essentially is one of the flattest, grassiest parts of the entire property. So that's you know, our concerns, and that's what we wanted to use the property for.
The exhibit, Mr. Keyes, of that shows where the ADU would go.
Yes.
Actually looks steeper and closer to the chaparral than the saddle area that was originally in there. Is that just?
Yeah, it's to avoid more grading because of that steep saddle area. Tim Roberts is the civil engineer that we're working with. And he said to minimize grading, that would be the best area there. Now, in that area of the ADU, there is one large oak tree, but it's declining. It's okay. Seen better days for sure. But other than that, there's not really any other impact.
And when I went out there to take a look, I was a little confused about which lot was which. And it seems like there's some grading going on nearby. That's not your lot. That's the next one?
I did stockpile some dirt on that area.
That is your lot.
And the grading up on the top, there was already an existing, you can see the, there's like a loop on the property. So
right.
I did clean up that road. And we found out that there's a road, the access road that's being used currently for the property, actually goes across different lots, our lot and the neighboring lot.
Okay.
So it's not really our property. So we need to get an access road onto the property. So I actually started thinking when I was doing, I was like, I better stop. So I did stop.
Okay.
So it, you know, but I figured, I think we can move 25 yards of dirt or something. In that, so.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Any other questions? Thank you. Okay. All right. Does anybody else like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the planning commissioners. Any comments or discussion on this item? I guess my feeling would be this is the second of these lots in the subdivision that we've amended the envelope. And it's always a little bit uncomfortable, especially when the envelopes were established more than 10 years ago, and we're not really doing a redo of the biology or any of that stuff. But on the other hand, having gone out there, having heard from the staff and the applicant, I don't find any compelling public policy reason for not approving this.
Yeah, further on that subject, I'm assuming that at the time these lots were designated, about 10 years ago or whatever, there were not individual owners present at that point in time to go out there and stand and say, here's what I want to do. So I can, like Commissioner says, I don't see a real reason to deny or even change it, but given that fact that they were arbitrary at the beginning, so I have no problem with adjustments when there's an actual owner wanting to build a house.
I wouldn't say they were arbitrary.
Well, right. Somebody had to draw the line around it. But
it's pretty common for them to do that when they do a subdivision. And, you know, but in hindsight, you're exactly right. So I guess I would like to recommend approval of SUB 2019. Dash 0079 to amend the building envelope for lot number 3, tract 2656, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
That should include the correction.
Yes.
Was that read into the record? That should include the minor correction.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Can we have a roll call then, please, Ramona?
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Chairman Moltari?
Yes. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Brings us to our next hearing item. Ramona, could you introduce that one, please?
Hearing to consider a request by Miguel Rodriguez on behalf of the Roman Catholic Bishop of Monterey for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2019-00188. Supervisorial District Number 4, Project Manager Emi Sugiyama.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning, Emi.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Emi Sugiyama. I'm here representing planning staff regarding a request by the Roman Catholic Bishop of Monterey for a conditional use permit, DRC 2019-00188. This is a request for a 970-square-foot conference room and storage space, as well as a 490-square-foot restroom. These two buildings would be connected by an uncovered outdoor storage area, and the buildings, as well as associated paving of the project, would result in the disturbance of approximately 9,000 square feet on a 9.2-acre parcel. The project is located in the eastern portion of the community of Napomo, which abuts the urban reserve line, and the property itself is located on South Thompson Avenue. This is within the residential single-family land use category in an area that transitions from mainly residential development to an open agricultural area. Here you can see an aerial view with the project site demarcated by the yellow star relative to the whole parcel. Here is an enlarged aerial. The proposed building is represented by that red rectangle. You can see that the project would be located in the interior space between existing buildings on what is currently turf. This site plan shows the proposed building, again outlined in red, as well as the paving improvements, which are demarcated by those squares. These floor plans show detail of the proposed interior space. Building A, outlined in red, contains the conference area and storage space, and Building B, outlined in blue, is the restroom. Again, these two would be connected by an uncovered storage area. Here are the north and south elevations of Building A, the west and east elevations of Building A. These are the north and south elevations of Building B, which is again that restroom, and the west and east elevations of Building B. Staff recommends approval of conditional use permit DRC 2019-00188 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And we're open for questions.
Very good. Any questions for staff? I just have one. Is there any need for an offer of dedication for pedestrian, bicycle, or equestrian right-of-ways? Maybe Mr. Grimm knows the answer to that.
As I recall, they are proposing a crosswalk, I believe, from the current fence on Burton Street where it terminates at the property,
but that's beginning on their own property from that point. We already have an offer of dedication for Burton Street.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to open the public hearing. Our applicant or anybody else like to speak to us, sir? Okay. And then I'll close the public hearing since there are no comments. And just one other question. Why does this even need a use permit?
It is required that religious facilities, which is this is associated with religious facility, come in for a conditional use permit based on our, I believe, Article 6 or
even
Article 2.
Even with a little amendment like this.
Even just a little one.
All right. Yeah. Since we have to do it, is there any questions, comments, motion?
I have a motion. Approved conditional use permit DRC 2019-00188 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Is there a second? I second it. Okay. Any comments on the or question on the question on the motion? Okay, can we have a roll call then, please, Ramona?
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Chairman Moltari?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Good luck. That brings us to the end of our hearings. Do I have a motion to enter testimony and exhibits into the record?
So move.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Very good. And the
motion to adjourn.
Very good. Second.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 All right. Everybody have a nice holiday season. We'll see you in the new year.
Yeah.